down. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner talking home run. Touchdown. Buzzer beater, do it all now. All now. Top corner like.
All right. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. It is Monday, May 12th, 2025, and this is the Monday Report. I'm your host, H. James K., and today we're going to be recapping the Sancio Grand Prix at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway Road Course, and we're going to be doing a forward-looking preview of the Indianapolis 500 qualifying in practice. All right, let's get into it. So first of all, let's recap the Grand Prix. IndyCar instituted a tire rule change just before the race in the middle of the week. And the new rule stipulated that instead of being required to use one set of both tire compounds whenever you wanted, teams were required to use two sets of both tires for at least two laps per stint. So this basically dictated a four-stint strategy, a three-stopper, as they call it, where you have to stop three separate times to get new tires. And this led to an insanely varied strategy, as teams didn't really know, not only didn't know which tire was really preferable, but some decided to use a lot of their red tires, which are the faster, stickier compound that wears out quicker. A lot of people used them in practice and qualifying and had very few, if any, brand new sets for the race, where the others just saved them completely for qualifying in the race and didn't practice on them, and some were using just sticker sets, and some were using sticker and scuffed sets, scuffed being basically they went into the pits and out of the pits. Didn't even put a hard lap on them, just to kind of take the outer layer off of the tires. As for the race, this change in strategy had a serious effect, because instead of teams just doing a quick stint on the softer tire to get rid of it and then going to the harder tire for the rest of the race, which had kind of been the strategic theme of the previous four races, you had teams doing, you know, sticker red, sticker black, scuffed red, or you had people like, you know, alternating like scuffed red, sticker black, sticker red, scuffed black, you know, that kind of thing. So it was one of these things where tons of different strategies, and as someone who was at the race, keeping track of the strategies was really interesting, and arguably this was the most exciting race of the year, even though, once again, there wasn't a lot of passing on the track. Although, there was both a caution and an on-track pass for the lead of the race. One of each. So that's two on-track passes for the lead this season, and two cautions through five races, both which must be records. Either way, reactions from drivers were mixed when it came to this new strategy. Scott Dixon of Chip Ganassi Racing absolutely hated it. He said it was not IndyCar's job to get into the whole strategy department and dictate terms, and that IndyCar should just get out of it and let the teams dictate their own strategy like they have been for the last several years. On the flip side, Penske driver Will Power and McLaren driver Patricio Award both hoped that the rule would continue. They both said that if the rule had been in place for Long Beach, the race would have been very, very different. So it remains to be seen if that rule stays in place for road and street course races. I hope it does, because I thought it did change things up. Graham Rahal and the rest of the Rahal-Letterman-Lanigan team qualified in the top six together for the first time ever. First time that had ever happened for the team. And Graham Rahal did his best to win the race. He led a good chunk of the race before the final stint, when Alex Palou finally passed him and took out a huge gap and just drove away and won the race, which was very demoralizing. But still, Rahal put on a great effort, and it looked like he might be able to do it if things had gone his way. Ultimately, though, tire strategy is what doomed Graham Rahal. It doomed Rossi as well, but both teams ended up on black tires instead of red tires, like Will Power, Scott McLaughlin, Scott Dixon, Kyle Kirkwood, Alex Palou, Patricio Award, all of which ended the race on sticker red tires. So, once again, team strategy hurt Rahal, which is kind of, I don't want to say expected, but it didn't surprise me either. And that's how I'll leave that. So it was generally kind of an up and down afternoon for the McLaren team. Christian Lundgaard didn't qualify well. He only qualified in 14th, and Nolan Siegel, his teammate, qualified even worse, qualifying in 18th. Pato was the only McLaren to even qualify well, and he qualified in 8th, which still wasn't what the McLaren team would have liked. A mistake in the pits ultimately doomed Lundgaard, giving him a penalty, while Siegel just kind of never did anything positive in the race and was just kind of there in the back. Pato, for his point, Pato drove a very quiet, conservative, steady race that saw pit strategy get him further and further towards the front, where he ultimately finished in second place. It was a very impressive drive because Pato has a bit of a reputation for being a tire eater. He really burns up his tires and doesn't save them well, but he did really good fuel and tire strategy, and he was really consistent, just banging away the laps in fifth place. Then it was fourth place. Then magically he was in second, and it was like, how did he get to second? And he just kind of stayed there till the rest of the race. I thought it was impressive. Scott Dixon and Kyle Kirkwood pulled out unexpectedly excellent finishes after poor qualifying. Dixon qualified 16th, while Kirkwood qualified a putrid 21st. Dixon had a quiet race that saw him finish an astounding 5th place, while Kirkwood finished an impressive 8th. Both drivers did a lot of on-track passing and passing in the pits, though I didn't see much of it, I guess. But both drivers were moving forward in the race, something fierce, and it was something to see. Now it is time to talk about Alex Palou. Alex Palou, that damn Spaniard. Mr. Perfect, the Perfect 10, however you want to call him. There's a ton of nicknames these days. The anger at Palou winning all the time has gone away. At this point, we are witnessing greatness. Alex Palou has won 4 of the first 5 races, and in the race he didn't win, he finished 2nd. It is a level of dominance unseen in IndyCar racing since AJ Foyt won 10 of the 13 races of the 1964 USAC Championship Trail season. And even then, AJ Foyt didn't even lose a race until after the 8th race of the 13th race season. That's how crazy it was. It was the kind of level of dominance from Palou that isn't really possible in a series like IndyCar, because IndyCar isn't spec where everything is the same. But it is almost completely spec. There's only dampers are allowed to be developed. So for a driver to dominate so thoroughly in every facet of the game, every week, over and over and over and over, shouldn't be possible. And yet Alex Palou is doing it. Alex Palou is currently 95 points ahead of second place, Kyle Kirkwood. Palou is so far ahead, the gap between him and second is the same as the gap between second and 22nd place in points, 95 points. He is so far ahead that we're beginning to naturally wonder, okay, when is it mathematically impossible for anyone else to win the championship? By my best estimate, I would think it's probably Monterey, which is the 14th race of the season. And that's assuming he wins, like, everything from now until, like, the end of July, but I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, he's dominating. Alex Palou passed Graham Rahal after a good chunk of the race, and then in like 3 laps, he pulled a 6-second gap out of thin air. Like, everyone else was standing still. According to Graham Rahal, other drivers were telling him to win, to beat Palou before the race when they're on the grid. Everyone wanted someone other than Palou to win. And Palou, it was like, all weekend I've been making the joke, it's like he has the Infinity Gauntlet with all the stones. He is inevitable. And that's what it felt like. It felt inevitable. It was like once you realized, oh crap, Alex Palou is going to finish the race on sticker reds. Oh, he's going to win. I came to that conclusion on lap 20 of 85. We hadn't even gotten to the first pit sequence, and when I realized, oh, he's got a sticker red, well, they're going to save that for the end, which means he's going to win. That was it. That's the kind of domination we're seeing right now. Which then leads to wonder, when is the race, the series going to be over? When is the championship race going to be over? I think it's going to be sometime in July. When it's going to be like, yeah, you know, between Kirkwood's last place finish in this race and Colton Herta not finishing here and Lundgaard blowing up in that race and Pato not doing this or that. Then, but yeah, Palou and his perfection is just, it's done. The interesting thing about that level of dominance is it makes one wonder, well, now we're getting into an oval race. Not only an oval race, but the oval race. The race to end all races, the Indianapolis 500. Alex Palou has never won an oval race. He's come damn close. In 2021, he finished in a close second to now four-time winner Elio Castroneves. He's been in the hunt in other oval races before, so it isn't like he's allergic to success at an oval. He's just never been lucky enough to actually win one. So, can he do it? Can he pull off the impossible? Now, if Alex Palou gets the pole and wins the race, the Indianapolis 500, then this thing is over. I don't care if it's mathematically possible for someone else to win. If he dominates the Indy 500 like he's dominated every road and street course, then there's nobody who can beat him. Because that means his car is better at everything than everyone else. So, it's incredible to see. I mean, it is truly a sight to behold at this point. I never thought it was possible for something like this to happen. And the crazy thing is, if you just take him out of the equation, second, third, and fourth are each separated by a total of 3 points. It's like 151 behind, 152 behind, 153 behind. That's how close second, third, fourth is. If it wasn't for Alex Palou, this would be an insanely close championship where, like, if one of these three guys wins the 500, they could just be way out in front in the championship. But instead, it's Alex Palou, and he's just gone. 95 points out front after only five races, which is just stupid. It's dumb. It's incredible. Every other descriptor you can imagine. All right, that's enough about the Sanseo Grand Prix. Now, it is time to look forward, because on Tuesday, they begin driving around Indianapolis Motor Speedway in the right direction, instead of going the wrong direction for the Sanseo Grand Prix. Yes, Tuesday is when practice for the race begins. Today, they're currently converting the track from road course to oval, and then on Tuesday, they will begin. So, before we get to the event schedule and predictions, I want to go through all of the teams and drivers who are going to be contesting the Indy 500 this year. There are 34 drivers who are entered to try to make the race. Only 33 of those 34 will actually end up making it. So, for the sake of simplicity, I have listed all of the teams in alphabetical order. So, starting at the top, we have AJ Foyt Enterprises, which is powered by Chevrolet engines. The team is owned by all-time great, long-time owner, former driver, AJ Foyt. AJ Foyt is a four-time winner. He is the first four-time winner, arguably one of the greatest drivers in the history of motorsport. The team is run mostly by AJ's son, Larry Foyt, considering AJ Foyt is well into his 80s at this point, and he's just not up to running the team anymore. AJ Foyt Enterprises has won multiple Indianapolis 500s, the latest of which was the 1998 Indianapolis 500, when Kenny Brack was driving for them in the Indy Racing League in only the third season of the Indy Racing League. It was a long time ago, if you aren't understanding what I'm putting down. These days, the team is a backmarker team, but they do have a technical partnership with Team Penske due to Foyt's excellent Indy 500 car setups. For some reason, the team that can't buy a top 10 finish anywhere is great at Indianapolis. And after years of struggling, Team Penske decided to get a technical partnership so they could get their hands on AJ Foyt's Indy 500 setup. And boy, did it work, because Penske's won the last two Indy 500s. So the first of the two drivers driving for AJ Foyt Enterprises this year is Santino Ferrucci. Ferrucci is an American driver who came up in the European Formula Car ladder system. He's an aggressive driver who always performs well at Indy. He is kind of contentious. Some people don't like him because of his brash personality and his aggression, but my dad and I really like him. He's very entertaining to watch. Next, we have David Malukas. Lil Dave, as some call him, is a talented driver who saw success in Indy Lights, which is now known as Indy Next. He is surprisingly good on ovals, though he has never won a race. The next team we got to talk about is Andretti Global. Andretti Global was powered by Honda engines. The team was formerly owned by Michael Andretti, though he sold his ownership to settle debts during the offseason. The team is now owned by Dan Tauris, owner of Group 1001. The team has a long history in IndyCar, including multiple victories at Indianapolis and a 2012 championship, among others. Colton Herta is the first driver for Andretti Global. He is the son of former driver Brian Herta, who is the best race strategist on the grid, some would say. Colton Herta is arguably the third fastest driver on the grid, though he is continually let down by his team. He had yet another pit mistake at the Sancio Grand Prix. Again, you know, because if he had no luck, if he didn't have bad luck, he'd have no luck at all. So, Herta's known as an aggressive driver, but he just can't buy a good break this year, which is really disappointing. The next driver we got to talk about is Kyle Kirkwood. Kyle Kirkwood is second in the points after the Sancio Grand Prix with 151 points. His race engineer is the aforementioned Brian Herta, meaning he is always a well-prepared team that doesn't make a lot of mistakes. Much like Pillow, Kirkwood is a very conservative, steady, smooth kind of driver who's good at taking care of tires and can kind of quietly dominate a race without a lot of flashy moves. Third for Andretti Global, we have Marcus Ericsson. Marcus Ericsson is the 2022 Indianapolis 500 champion. He's a former Formula One driver, having spent almost a decade in Formula One, if not longer than a decade. He's very talented, and he knows how to win in Indianapolis. Finally, we have Marco Andretti, son of former team owner Michael Andretti. Marco owns his car, and it is a one-off entry every single year. He almost won the 500 in 2006 as a rookie, but was beaten to the finish line by former driver Sam Hornish. Marco Andretti is a guy who was fast at one point, but is no longer. And he's just kind of there in the middle of the pack. He's never really a threat to win, but he contests the thing for love of the game, so to speak. All right, the next team we got to talk about is the Arrow McLaren IndyCar team. Arrow McLaren is the second Chevrolet-powered team on our list. Formerly the Sam Schmidt-owned Schmidt-Peterson Motorsports, McLaren is an emerging presence in IndyCar. It is run by the famous Formula One team of the same name, that being McLaren. McLaren spends money like Penske and Ganassi trying to elevate a once small midfield team to the status of a championship contender. The team has come up just short at Indianapolis each of the last 3 years, but they're consistently fast at the speedway. The first of the four drivers Arrow McLaren IndyCar team is putting in the field is Patricio Award. Pato Award is arguably the most popular driver in the series, with a bright smile and a fun personality. Pato is known for his aggressive driving and daring moves. The dude is absolutely insane. He's cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. If he didn't have to worry about tire deg, he'd run with his hair on fire and his balls hanging out half the time. But sadly, the car doesn't allow him to do that anymore. Pato Award is currently 100 points back in a distant fourth place in the championship. Alright, next of the McLaren drivers, we got to talk about Nolan Siegel. Nolan Siegel is a young driver. He looks like he's 12 years old. He's got such a baby face and he's so short. He's a paid driver from an affluent family. He was reasonably successful in Indy Lights, but Tony Kanaan, the former fan favorite, former driver, now team principal of the Arrow McLaren IndyCar team, has vouched heavily for Nolan Siegel, which is why he is currently the third driver on the team. He's okay. He shows flashes, but he's a pay driver at the end of the day. Third of the four drivers, we have Christian Lundgaard. Christian Lundgaard is a former Formula 2 driver from Denmark. He's one of the most impressive drivers this season, which is his first with McLaren. Lundgaard is a smooth, steady, very European style of driver. He, much like Pillow, is one of these guys who maybe won't wow you with his moves, but his quiet consistency is what really drives home his success. So he is definitely someone to watch. Last of the four drivers we have to talk about for McLaren is Kyle Larson. Kyle Larson is a NASCAR driver. He drives for Hendrick Motorsports in the NASCAR Cup Series. He is attempting to do the double for the second year in a row. The double is attempting to do the Indianapolis 500 and the Coca-Cola 600 in the same day, back-to-back, which would be a grand total of 1,100 miles. Only one person has ever completed both races, and that was Tony Stewart back in the early 2000s. Kyle Larson is one of the most talented drivers in the world. Many would argue he can drive supercar, V8 supercar, sports cars, sprints, midgets. He's pretty okay at an IndyCar. He can drive the hell out of a NASCAR. He's really good. Given enough time, he could pretty much win in everything, I would argue. So, last year's attempt was hampered by both a poor-performing car and rain. There was a significant rain delay at the Indy 500 last year, which kind of precluded him from even really attempting the double because he missed the start of the Coca-Cola 600, which is down in Charlotte, North Carolina. So he's going to be one of the more popular drivers considering he's from NASCAR, but it remains to be seen if he will be truly competitive at the front of the race. Who knows? All right, next of the teams we got to talk about is Chip Ganassi Racing. Chip Ganassi Racing is powered by Honda engines. The team is the second most successful IndyCar team behind only Penske. Ganassi has been the unquestioned king of IndyCar in 2025. They last won the Indy 500 with Marcus Ericsson in 2022. The team has won four of the five races in 2025. And, well, the team doesn't make mistakes. They don't crash. They're the fastest team on the grid, and they dominate in every way on a historical scale. It's disgusting and impressive. The first driver we got to talk about from Chip Ganassi Racing is Kiffin Simpson. He's a pay driver who hasn't done anything. Moving on, we got to talk about the unquestioned greatest driver in the history of IndyCar racing, the Kiwi, Scott Dixon. Hailing from New Zealand, he is the greatest IndyCar driver of all time. Even though technically AJ Foyt has more Indy 500 wins than him, Scott Dixon has six championships, the same as AJ Foyt, and he has a single Indianapolis 500 championship, which was won in 2008. The thing that makes Scott Dixon the greatest driver of all time in IndyCar is the fact that he's second in all-time victories behind only AJ Foyt. He's tied for championships, and he's doing all of it in a series that, unlike when AJ was driving, is largely spec. It isn't the days when you could just build a car faster than everybody and just drive away from the field with little ease, with little difficulty. If you want to dominate in modern IndyCar, you have to dominate by sheer fucking will. So the fact that Scott Dixon has dominated IndyCar racing since 2003 makes him the greatest driver of all time. Now, at 44 years old, Father Time seems to be catching up with him. He's not qualifying well this year, though he has driven the shit out of his cars in multiple races, including the last two races where he drove from the back towards the front in impressive fashion. Dixon is... They used to call him the Iceman because of his steely determination and mindset, but he has kind of mellowed out since then. But he's always a threat. Nobody saves tires and fuel like him, even after all these years. So, he's always a threat. Next, and lastly for Chip Ganassi, we got to talk about Alex Palou. That damn Spaniard. Mr. Perfect. The Perfect 10. Everyone calls him something else. Inevitable. He's Mr. Thanos. He's dominating this season. Incredibly so. He's historically fast and is driving almost without fault. The only mistake the 10 car has made all year was there was one snafu in the pits during the Santiago Grand Prix, and it was a tiny baby one that didn't make any difference. That's how flawless Alex Palou is driving. He's from Spain. He came up in the kind of European ladder series system, and he was discovered and brought to IndyCar from the Japanese Super Formula, which was formerly called Formula Nippon, which is now just called Super Formula, which is the top-level Japanese open-wheel racing series, dominated by Honda and Toyota in a rivalry that goes all over Japan. He was driving in that series, and he was brought to IndyCar, and he spent 1 year with Dale Coyne Racing, where he was fairly impressive. And ever since then, he has been dominating with Chip Ganassi. He has won three of the last... He is on pace to win 3 of the last 4 IndyCar championships. He won last year, and then he won 2 years before that. And it looks like he's well on his way to winning a third one. He is a young driver. He's charismatic. He's nice, well-liked, and people wouldn't be so damn mad at him if he wasn't winning all the damn time. But, well, much like anyone else who dominates, no matter how nice you are, people are still going to hate you. He's maybe the smoothest driver I've seen in the series in a long time. In my opinion, he should be in Formula One. I think he would be incredible in a Formula One car. He'd be so smooth. He can take care of tires. He's consistent. He doesn't really burn up fuel a lot. He's really good. He's so damn good. But he's probably going to win everything and never stop winning and win for ever and all time until he's won 1,000 straight races and blah, 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 blah. It's demoralizing, but it's so damn impressive. Moving on. Dale Coyne Racing, powered by Honda. Dale Coyne Racing is owned and was founded by former kart series driver Dale Coyne, whose claim to fame is getting set on fire in Long Beach in 1982 and having to have about 4 separate teams' pit crews dump buckets of water on him to make him so that he didn't burn to death. He retired shortly after that, and he has been a team owner ever since. The team he runs is a nothing-budget backmarker team that subsists on pay drivers and is perpetually on the verge of disappearing forever, it seems. Though they are severely underfunded, they often don't announce their driver lineup until the week before the race, and yet still manage to be scrappy and pull out a good result every once in a while. Especially back when the days of Sebastian Bourdais was driving for Dale Coyne. They were in a threat to win back in those days. In 2025, Dale Coyne Racing is doing pretty dang well considering their status. They have several top 10 finishes this year, including the last 2 from Rinus VK in the last 2 races. Speaking of Rinus VK, he's the first driver we got to talk about for Dale Coyne. So Rinus VK is from, I think it's called Hoopsdorp in the Netherlands. He was driving full-time for Ed Carpenter last year, but now he drives for Dale Coyne. He has outdriven the expectations for his car multiple times this season. He's very talented. He should be in a top drive, but he's not because reasons, I guess. I mean, I don't know if he should be driving for Penske, but like Andretti should definitely have taken a look at him because he's just that good. He drove the pants off of an Ed Carpenter racing car back when Ed Carpenter was slow. And yet, he's driving for arguably the worst team on the grid. I shouldn't say that. There are other teams that are way worse this year, but the point stands. The second of the 2 Dale Coyne cars is driven by Jacob Abel. Jacob Abel is a pay driver with a rich father, his father owning Abel Construction in Ohio. He drove in Indy Lights for years and has now made the jump to IndyCar. He's rather unspectacular. But, whatever. Money is money. Next up, we got to talk about Dreyer and Reinbold Racing with Cusick Motorsports. This is a combination of Dennis Reinbold and his business partner and another group called Cusick Motorsports, which is a little-known kind of junior formula team that have kind of paired up in the last couple of years to bring the Dreyer and Reinbold car to the Speedway. Dreyer and Reinbold Racing is a one-off. They only ever do the Indianapolis 500. They've never won, but they have scored some impressive finishes over the years. The first of the 2 drivers that Dreyer and Reinbold Racing is fielding this year is Ryan Hunter Ray. Hunter Ray, known sometimes as Captain America, is a former Andretti Global driver and the only non-Penske, non-Ganassi IndyCar champion since unification in 2008. Every other championship has been won by Ganassi or Penske. He won the 2014 Indianapolis 500, defeating Elio Castroneves. That was an amazing race. I was there at that race. The last 10 laps, back and forth between 2 bright yellow cars, one being DHL, one being Pennzoil sponsored, and it was amazing. Ultimately, Elio lost, which I was disappointed about, but it was impressive. Ryan Hunter Ray is a talented driver. He's very experienced. He's not been super impressive the last 10 years, but he's a good driver, and he helps bring a lot of credibility to the Dreyer and Reinbold team. So next, we have to talk about Jack Harvey. Jack Harvey is a British former IndyCar driver that now works as a pit reporter for Fox on normal race broadcasts in 2025, but is now contesting the Indy 500 in 2025 as a one-off. He's a nice guy, he's well-liked, with a handful of notable results, but he has never won. Ultimately, I think he should quit driving and stick to being a pit reporter where he is so good. He's been very good this year. Moving on, we got to talk about Ed Carpenter Racing. Ed Carpenter Racing is owned by, well, Ed Carpenter, who is the stepson or in-law, like son-in-law of former IndyCar owner, Indianapolis Motor Speedway owner Tony George. I don't know how their relationship works, but I guess he's kind of family money from that perspective, where he was many, many, many moons ago. The team he owned started life as Sarah Fisher Hartman Racing before Ed Carpenter bought them out and turned it into Ed Carpenter Racing. The team has been competitive at Indianapolis in years past and has gotten the pole twice. Ed Carpenter himself finished second in 2018, the best result for a driver in Ed Carpenter Racing. The first of the three drivers we have to talk about for Ed Carpenter Racing is Alexander Rossi, the former Andretti Autosport, now known as Andretti Global, former McLaren driver, former Formula One driver, won the 100th Indianapolis 500 in 2016 as a rookie with what is now called Andretti Global. He was a consistent championship and race contender before the debut of the Aero Screen in 2020, and especially before the hybrid in 2024. He's a talented driver, but we have to face facts and admit that his results the last 8 years just haven't really, not 8 years, that's too much, 6 years haven't been that great, but he's still a great driver. And he chose a longer-term contract with Ed Carpenter Racing versus a shorter contract with McLaren, and now drives for Ed Carpenter Racing. The rumors say that he has brought a lot of credibility to Ed Carpenter Racing and has helped them really up their game, so I'm hopeful that this will turn into a good result at the Speedway this year, because, gosh, they have been so dreadful as a team the last couple of years when they could be better, because we know they've been better. So, Ross is a good driver. Hopefully he can do something with Ed Carpenter Racing. Next, we got to talk about Christian Rasmussen. This is his second year in IndyCar. Rasmussen made a name for himself last year with his bold, borderline reckless passes in the race and in practice in 2024. He's an up-and-comer in the series with a background in the Indy Lights. He's from Europe. He's okay. Finally, we got to talk about Ed Carpenter. Ed Carpenter used to drive full-time in the series, even though he's dreadful at road courses. Then he became just an oval-only guy. And then people started realizing, you know, you're not great at ovals anymore, and you're really hurting your team's ability to win leader circle money. So now he just drives the Indianapolis Motor Speedway, the Indianapolis 500. Two-time pole sitter with a second place in 2018. He is a well-liked driver who has driven ovals for years. He does have one career win at Chicagoland Speedway. That's a great race. It's from like 2009 or 2006. Excellent race. Really close finish. God, I wish they'd go back to that track. But they won't. Next, we got to talk about Juncos Hollinger Racing, which is powered by Chevy. And if I didn't mention it before, Ed Carpenter Racing is also powered by Chevy. Juncos Hollinger Racing is owned by Argentina native Ricardo Juncos. The team is an outgrowth of his successful Indy Lights team of the same name. The team is most famous for bumping Formula One driver Fernando Alonso from the Indianapolis 500 in 2019 using a then-unsponsored car. Yeah, Kyle Kaiser was the driver at the time. They had sponsorship trouble. He cracked up the car. They had to borrow parts from other teams to kind of put this thing together, and it looked like a Frankenstein. It had no, half of it was bare white. It had no sponsorship, and then he bumped his way into the field and bumped out one of the greatest drivers in the world. I was there. It was crazy. It's the reason why McLaren is a full-time team now, because they didn't want to be embarrassed, and they decided to do it the right way. Maybe we should be thanking them, because now we have a great, well-funded team. Anyway, the first of two drivers being fielded by Juncos Hollinger is Connor Daly. He's a local boy, raised, born and raised in Noblesville, Indiana. He is the son of Irish former kart series driver Derek Daly. Daly is a popular fan favorite at the Speedway, though he is a journeyman driver who's driven for a number of teams. Off the top of my head, he's driven for Carlin, which no longer exists, Ed Carpenter Racing, AJ Foyt Enterprises, Chip Ganassi Racing. I'm pretty sure he drove for Andretti Autosport at one point. He's been around. He's done that. He's okay, but he's exceedingly popular. He's very popular, even if he doesn't really have the results to back up that popularity. The second of the two drivers fielded by Junkos Hollinger is Stingray Rob. I have watched Stingray Rob since he was in what was then called Pro Mazda, now which would be called like USF 2000 and USF Pro 2000. I've watched this kid grow up. He is a product of the IndyCar development system, the aforementioned Indy Lights, USF 2000, and USF Pro 2000. Rob has been a backmarker for the last few years in IndyCar, though. He's from Idaho, and he's very religious, and is often sporting religious sponsorships on his car. He's not particularly fast, and he often races in the back. But he's got a hell of a name, though. I mean, Stingray Rob, what can you say, you know? Next, we got to talk about Meyer Shank Racing, powered by Honda. The team is a small team that has gotten mighty results. Owned by former driver Michael Shank, Sirius XM owner Jim Meyer, Formula One owner Liberty Media, and driver Elio Castroneves. The team has a technical partnership with Chip Ganassi Racing, whereas they had a technical partnership with Andretti Global in previous years. The first of three drivers that Meyer Shank Racing is fielding this year is one of the greatest racers of all time, four-time Indianapolis 500 champion Elio Castroneves, also known as the Spider-Man for his proclivity of climbing up the catch fences when he wins races. Done it for years. He is one of the all-time great drivers at the Indy 500. He has won four races and finished second another three times. There is a very real likelihood that he could be a seven-time winner if a couple of things went differently, which is nuts. He is one of only four to ever do it. To win four races at four Indy 500s, AJ Foyt, Rick Mears, and Al Unser Sr., all of which are regarded as the greatest to ever do it. Sadly, Al Unser Sr. is no longer with us, but at least he was alive to see Elio Castroneves do it, which I think is the important part. Elio is a one-off driver. He has, historically, he was full-time for a long time, and then he was just Indy only with Penske, and then after he left Penske, he became full-time again with Shank for a little while, and then he was just a couple of races, and now he's just Indy only again. But considering he's like 45 years old, I think he'll take it. He is trying to win his fifth Indianapolis 500. I think he might be able to do it. He's really good at this place. It's weird. Father Time seems to be undefeated, and then you'll see him win the Indianapolis 500 out of nowhere like he did in 2021. He was as far back as like 18th in that race at one point, and he still won because he is just that good. Next, for Meyer Shank Racing, we got to talk about Felix Rosenqvist. He's a former European driver from Sweden. They call him Rosie, as I don't know why. I know why they call him Rosie, but such a weird nickname. Rosie, as they call him, is a steady conservative driver. He has won races before and has driven for both Chip Ganassi Racing and Arrow McLaren. He's a good driver. He's soft-spoken, kind of quiet, very good driver. Third and final driver for Meyer Shank is Marcus Armstrong. He's a pay driver that used to drive for Chip Ganassi Racing before Chip's four-car team had to become a three-car team due to the hybrid. He's a Kiwi from Christchurch, New Zealand. He has been fast in short stretches, but he hasn't exactly blown the world away either. He's okay. All right. Next, we got to talk about the newest team on the IndyCar series, Prema. I used to think they were called Prima, but they're Prema. Prema is brand new, heralding from Italy. Prema is a famous and competitive junior Formula team in Europe. They have a successful Formula 3 and Formula 2 program that has seen Formula 1 drivers like Charles Leclerc, Oscar Piastri, and Esteban Ocon all drive for them before reaching Formula 1. The team is starting from scratch, no technical partnerships, just their own guys and trying to do it themselves, which is bold because it takes a lot to really start up a new team. They are bringing two drivers to the Speedway. The first of their two drivers is Robert Schwartzman. Robert Schwartzman is a Russian driver born in Israel who races under the Israeli flag since the Russo-Ukrainian War of 2022. Schwartzman drove for Prema in previous seasons before switching to sports car racing after his Formula One dreams kind of never materialized. But when it was announced that Prema was going to start up an IndyCar team, he signed with them to drive again. The next driver we have to talk about is Callum Ilott. He's an English driver and has been driving for Hunkos Hollinger Racing for the last few years. But he has switched to Prema, whom he drove for in Formula 2. Ilott isn't the most remarkable driver, but he's experienced enough that he's going to really help Prema grow, I think. So I like the signing of him, even though I kind of wish they would have hired someone faster, like Rinus VK, maybe. All right, the next team we got to talk about is Rahal Letterman-Lanigan Racing, which is powered by Honda. Founded and owned by former Kart Series champion and Indianapolis 500 champion Bobby Rahal, the team is co-owned by businessman Mike Lanigan and former late-night host David Letterman. The team has a long history in IndyCar racing, including wins at the Speedway and discovering famous drivers like Danica Patrick. The team has struggled tremendously in the last few years, but it looks like they've sorted out some other issues. I'm really encouraged by this, the efforts from Rahal Letterman-Lanigan this year. They've made changes, they've made strides, and it's really starting to show on track. The first of four drivers that they're bringing to the Speedway this year is Graham Rahal, son of Bobby Rahal. Graham is an outspoken member of the IndyCar community, along with being a fan favorite. It has been 8 years since his last win, but only 2 years since he was bumped from the Indianapolis 500 field, which is the lowest point of any IndyCar driver's career. He cried. Saddest thing you've ever seen. He tried so hard, and he ended up actually racing in that race that year because another driver got hurt, so he kind of filled in, but it was really sad watching him get bumped. But he's experienced, steady, capable of winning, and if he had better equipment and a better team, he'd probably win a lot more. Second driver of the four that Rahal Letterman-Lanigan is bringing is Devlin DeFrancesco. He's a pay driver from Canada. Okay, next we got to talk about Louis Foster. Louis Foster is a rookie from Indy Lights that has made the jump to IndyCar and is going through the expected ups and downs of the rookie season. Finally, we got to talk about Takuma Sato. Two-time Indianapolis 500 champion hails from Japan. He's an older, extremely experienced driver who could easily have three Indy 500 victories, if not for some bad luck in 2013, I think, maybe 2012. I can't quite remember. Sato is known for his extremely aggressive driving and his slogan being "No attack, no chance." Another thing that Sato is really known for is he's really good at developing a car. We know this because when Rahal Letterman-Lanigan got rid of him, their car got really slow. And then they brought him back, and suddenly their car is really good again. Funny how that works. Moving on, the final team we got to talk about is Team Penske, who is powered by Chevy. They are the richest, most successful team in IndyCar ever, with 20 Indianapolis 500 victories in its history, on top of innumerable championships and race wins. They have employed drivers like Paul Tracy, Al Unser Jr., Rick Mears, Danny Sullivan, oh gosh, Sam Hornish Jr., Jules DeFerrin, Will Power, Elio Castroneves, so many drivers. Al Unser Sr., I'm pretty sure Danny Ungaez drove for them once. So many. Were they great? They probably drove for Penske at least once, considering Penske's been at the Speedway every year since 1970, other than a couple of years during the split. Founded by Roger Penske, the billionaire owner of Penske Shipping, Penske Entertainment, Penske Media Group, blah, 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 they were founded back in the 60s. The team has now is now being run by longtime race engineer Tim Sindrick. Penske is kind of slumping this year. It's the damnedest thing. The team just isn't very good in 2025, and no one can really understand why. The drivers claim that they like the car, that the cars are handling well, that things are going good. They're not really making a lot of strategy mistakes, and yet Penske's not winning. Like, not even a little. The first of the drivers fielded by Team Penske this year is Joseph Newgarden. He is the winner of the last two Indianapolis 500s and is a two-time series champion. He's the best driver on the team. The American is arguably one of the faces of the series, not to mention one of the fiercest competitors on the grid. Joe New, as he is called, has somewhat struggled this season along with the rest of his team, but if anyone on his team had to have the best shot at the Indianapolis 500 this year, it would probably be him. The second driver for Team Penske this year is Scott McLaughlin. Scotty Mac, as he's called, is an Australian driver with his roots being V8 supercars. He was dominating in V8 supercars before Roger Penske discovered him and brought him to America. Now, he's married and has his U.S. citizenship, being a dual citizen of America and Australia. He is a talented driver who is always... This year, he is arguably been Penske's biggest threat on a week-by-week basis, though I don't know if I like his chances at Indianapolis, considering he's been just okay at Indy, but he has been arguably the most consistent driver for the Penske team this year. Finally, we got to talk about Will Power. He's one of the most experienced drivers in the field. He is a series champion and an Indianapolis 500 champion. He won the Indy 500 in 2018. He is the all-time greatest qualifier in the history of Indy car racing. He broke Mario's record of like 70 poles last year. When it comes to qualifying, Power is the GOAT. He is the greatest ever of all time. The Mount Rushmore of qualifying in IndyCar is just Power three times and then Mario Andretti. That's how good he is. So, Power is very blunt. He's very blunt with the press, with fans, with other drivers. He's kind of an aggressive driver, but he's kind of mellowed out with age. And he's good, but he's been very quiet the last couple years. He doesn't win as much. It's one of these things where his contract is up after this season, and I would not be surprised if Penske lets him go, which would be a damn shame, but that's how Penske rolls. All right, that wraps up all the teams, which has taken me like 30 damn minutes. Holy crap. But now we got to look for, we got to talk about the event schedule. So practice begins on Tuesday, May 13th at 12:15 p.m. with a rookie orientation and part-time veteran refresher session, which is for all the rookies and all the guys who do one-offs, where they're getting to do their rookie refresher, rookie orientation programs, or veteran refresher programs if they hadn't already done them at the April test held at the Speedway like 2 weeks ago. At 2:15 on Tuesday, every driver will be able to begin practicing, and they will be able to do that until like 6 o'clock when practice is done for the day. Practice will continue on Wednesday and Thursday with everyone being allowed to practice. There will be two sessions, morning session, afternoon session, both days. On Friday, we have what's known as Fast Friday, where teams are allowed to turn up the engines to the boost levels they will run during qualifying. This is a gimmicky attempt to make sure that qualifying is faster than 230 miles an hour, because if they ran the cars at the boost levels that they do during the race, they would barely scratch 224 miles an hour in qualifying trim. So instead, they give them about an extra 100 horsepower and just turn them loose to go 234 miles an hour four-lap averages like they did last year. Ultimately, I think they should just race at that faster speed, but I'm a bit of a purist like that, I guess. Either way, Fast Friday is when teams do qualifying prep. No more pack running, no more doing 25-lap stints. It's you go out, you do a four-lap qualifying simulation in clean air, not in dirty air, because if you do, then it doesn't matter what you did or not, because the results won't be valid. And you prepare for Saturday and Sunday. Qualifying takes place over two days on Saturday and Sunday. Saturday establishes the qualifying order of positions 13 through 30. with drivers allowed to attempt to qualify in the top 12 for a shot at the pole, or try to make the race at all by making sure they're in and qualifying 30th or higher. This Saturday is kind of what bump day used to be, bump day being the day when you would bump drivers out of the 33-car field. Always been the last day of qualifying, but with the way the format works these days, old-school bump day is kind of Saturday, and new-school bump day is on Sunday. Speaking of Sunday, on Sunday, there is the last row shootout, where the four drivers not yet qualified battle it out for the last row. The slowest driver gets the boot and has to go home. For the top 12 drivers, the last part of Sunday qualifying, they do a one-attempt shootout where you go in inverse order of who was fastest the previous day, and you get to do your four-lap average, and you bang out a qualifying session, and the fastest one gets the pole, and you just 1 through 12 from there. It's very straightforward, but it's very dramatic because it's getting later in the day, and the sun's going down, the track's getting faster. On Monday of next week, there is a practice session, which is the final really big, long, all-day kind of practice session where the teams can do a lot of more of their race trim stuff. And you'll see a lot of pack racing, a lot of pack running on that Monday. And after that, there is one final practice session on Friday before the Indy 500, known as Carb Day. Carburation Day is a thing from the days when the cars had carburetors and were naturally aspirated. Back in those days, you wanted to do one final practice session just a couple of days before the race so that you could tune your carburetor to the atmospheric conditions closest possible to the race, because they didn't have the equipment to predict those kind of things like they do now. So they would tune their carburetors on those days. These days, Carb Day is just big-ass party with a practice session in the morning and a concert and pit stop competitions, but there is one final practice on Friday morning. And after that, it's time to go fast for 200 laps on Sunday. God, it's going to be crazy. I can't wait. So now that we've done that, let's talk about pre-practice qualifying predictions. These are just my gut predictions after five races of the season. I am predicting that one of the drivers from the four best teams will be in danger of not making the race. This means that one of the drivers from Ganassi, McLaren, Penske, or Andretti will be in serious danger of not making the race. And when I mean one of the drivers, I don't mean like Kiffin Simpson. I mean like someone like important, like a heavy hitter, like Kirkwood, Herta, Pato O'Ward, God forbid, knock on wood. Or like Joseph Newgarden or Alex Palou or Scott Dixon, someone like that would like gather news headlines like, oh my God, is that person going to make the race? Or are they going to get bumped? Are we going to see Penske in 1995 all over again? Or Bobby Rahal in 1993? That kind of thing. Alex Palou will lead the timesheet on Fast Friday, filling everyone with dread. Then, he won't qualify inside the top 12 due to a problem on his qualifying attempt and time running out, and forcing him to start probably 13th. Of course, that's not going to stop him from probably winning the damn race, but it'll certainly add to the drama. And my final prediction is that the Premas will be safely in the field with some combination of Jacob Abel, Louis Foster, Stingray Robb, Connor Daly, Jack Harvey, and one of the big-name drivers to be named later, all battling to make the race. Now, it's important to note that Prema has been the slowest team, the most inept team, the most rudderless team in IndyCar this year. They have been nowhere. Which is why me predicting that they're going to be safely within the top 30, bit of a hot take. But it's what I believe. I just have this weird gut feeling that they're just going to be better. You know, they're going to be in the hunt. And by in the hunt, I don't mean in the hunt for victory. They're not going to win at all. Hell, they probably won't even finish. But I do think that they're not going to be on bump watch at all. I think they're going to have the racing gods are going to take pity on them and just kind of will them into the top 30 on Saturday, and they'll be done with it. All right, so next week, this weekend, I'm going to qualifying. So I'll be driving home on Sunday. So if I get home at a reasonable-ish time, which I won't, it'll probably be the Monday report on a Monday. But if I don't and I get home at like 3 in the morning, then it's probably going to be the Monday report on a Tuesday. Now, I can guarantee you it's going to be the Monday report on a Tuesday for the 26th of May, because I'm driving home from the Indianapolis 500 on Monday, and I'm going to be gone all damn day, and I'm not recording my podcast in my car. Not doing it. So that's a thing. But next Monday might have an episode, might not. Depends on how tired I am when we get home from the race, from qualifying and everything. So next week's episode will be Indy 500 preview / qualifying recap / race predictions kind of thing. We're going to recap what happened this coming weekend, and then I'm going to give you my definitive. Here's who's going to win. Who's going to win Rookie of the Year? Biggest loser, all those kind of things. That's where my really like lay down my big predictions episode is going to be. And remember, probably a Monday, might be a TMR on a Tuesday. But like I said, that remains to be seen. All right. Thank you all for tuning in. For those of you listening on Apple Podcasts and Spotify, Audible.com, Amazon Music, all of those, thank you. There are so few of you, but if you're doing it, you're seeking it out, and we're hard to find. Spread the word, help us grow the podcast. For those of you listening on YouTube, like, comment, subscribe, hit the bell icon to get notified whenever I upload another episode. Spread the word, help feed the algorithm to help the channel grow. So that'll do it. My name is H. James K. Thank y'all for tuning in. Until next time.